Okay, good morning. Bereshis Rabbi Kron. So we are on Yud Tes Amud Beis. Just to review where we're up to, the major topic that we've been involved in for the last long time has been the concept of Pesha Aser Hushahiter, that if a person is the one who is bringing information that's not available from another source, that gives him some level of belief reliability to make some additional statement that potentially uproots something or potentially protects them from something or whatnot. So where we then evolved to talking about in the last Mishnah the concept of a shtar and witnesses, where we talked about where there's a shtar, where a shtar is alone potentially between person A and person B. The Beis Din, when they would have a dispute about the shtar, they would seek to certify the shtar by one of three methods. The first of the methods is to have the witnesses come in and say, yes, we signed this. The other two methods involve other people besides the witnesses. And the discussion is all around where the witnesses are the ones who certify the shtar. Therefore, they're in the Pesha Asar category. And then they add some other factor, which either says that they were disqualified to be as witnesses or some other thing about the shtar itself that makes it an invalid shtar. So in essence, they're certifying the shtar, and then the question is, can they then disqualify the shtar in one way or the other? So generally, we had some back and forth, but there were two core reasons where we didn't allow that to happen. Number one is because there's a concept of once there's a testimony that certifies something done, they don't have the right or ability to make a secondary testimony, despite the fact that there might be Pesha Asar. And the second scenario is they're not allowed to say something that's self-incriminating. So, for example, if they said that they were forced or bribed to do it, you wouldn't necessarily believe them. And that led us into the last case, which we talked about, or the case we talked about last time, which is a shtar amana. Shtar amana is a certified loan document, but the loan never happens. So person A and person B create this loan document. They have it written and signed and witnessed, but there was never a loan. And theoretically, the reason they're doing this is that they want to have it ready for a future loan to happen. But that's the discussion is that it's a bad practice, that there's a pasuk that calls it potentially an avla, an injustice. And therefore, people are not, it's not a good thing to do. And therefore, if witnesses say that they signed, they signed the shtar, but it was a shtar amana, they're not believed, potentially because it's self-incriminating and it's a bad thing to do. So then we ended off with a discussion about a shtar amana and a shtar moda'a. A shtar moda'a is where there's a sale between party A and party B, and the seller the witnesses say the seller at the time of the sale said, I am selling this under duress. I do not want to sell this, but the guy says he's going to murder me if I don't sell it. And the witnesses therefore are saying that, yes, we signed it, but it was a shtar modah, so it should have in reality been an invalid sale. And where we ended off was with there were basically two opinions. The first opinion was the opinion of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says they are not believed. So he says a shtar amana and a shtar modah, in both cases, they're not believed. And then the opposite opinion is Mar Baravashi, who says the shtar amana, they're not believed, but the shtar modah, they are believed because they did it for the right reason. They did it because the guy was going to suffer badly if they didn't help him execute this document, and therefore it's not considered an avla, it's considered a helping him out, and therefore they're believed to undo it. So where we are now is where it says Ba'amine Rava Mirav Nachman, which is about halfway down. Ba'amine is the first word on the line, so it's literally about halfway down.
So the shtar amana, is there a date on the shtar amana?
I don't know, probably. I don't know for sure, but potentially, yeah. Because it says a loan happened. Maybe it does or maybe it doesn't, I don't know. Because it says a loan happened and signed, whatever. So it talks about a loan as if it happened.
Right.
Whether it's dated or not, I don't specifically now. Okay, so now we're going to talk about a tnai, a condition. So just the scenario here is, and Gemara will talk this, but talk it outside for a second. The scenario here is that there's a shtar between person A and person B. Let's say it's a loan between person A and person B. And the witnesses say, in addition to what's written in the document, there's an unwritten condition that was here. So for example, making something up, let's say that there's a shtar that says someone is going to borrow, person A borrows 1,000 pounds of bricks from person B, and that's what it says in the shtar, but there's a condition that says I'm going to return it to the person's garage, and instead he leaves it in front of his front door. So the witnesses say there was this unwritten condition, and the question is, what does that mean? Why the condition? Does it mean when they say the condition is unfulfilled, meaning that the loan, that this is an incomplete, they're basically uprooting the agreement because they said the agreement as written is an incomplete writing and therefore it's not a valid shtar, or are they just adding something on top of it? And we'll talk about what the differences are as we go into it. So Ba'yiminei, Rav Merav Nachman. So we ask, so Rava asks of Rav Nachman, and remember Rav Nachman said he doesn't believe the witnesses whether it's a shtar amana or a shtar moda. In either case, he doesn't believe him. So they ask him, if the witnesses come and they say, Tnai hayu dvarenu meha, when we signed this document, there was a tnai. So this tnai, again, is not written into the shtar, but he says there is a condition, right? So what would Rav Nachman say? Moda v'amana, when it came to a moda and an amana, in those cases, hainu taima dekai akra legashtare. The reason that he says that you don't believe in either case is that in that case, they're basically revoking the document. They're saying what it says in the document is not accurate. Yes, we signed it, but what it says in the document is not accurate. There was a secondary condition. So it's not just that there was a loan of bricks, but there was also a condition of how it's supposed to be transported, and therefore it's not valid. And therefore, in the case of Shtar Amana and Shtar Moda, he says you're not allowed to, they're not valid because they're uprooting the document. And in our case, in our case as well, the stipulation is basically uprooting the shtar. It's saying it's not a valid shtar, and therefore that's why they're not believed. Odilma, maybe, Tanai Milsa Akhrisahi. Know that when they're adding tonight, it's just adding a clause. It's basically saying, yes, this is a document. It's a valid document. We certify the document. But there's this additional clause. So they're not saying something to, quote unquote, pasel the shtar. They're basically adding on information. So Rav Nachman says, Armalei ka'asilu kamal ledina, when they would come to us for into our bezdin when they held the document and they would say that there was a tanai, Amrina lehu zil kame tanaihu v'chusei ledina. They would tell the people who they would tell the parties, go fulfill your part of the tanai and then come back to us. So meaning that they would believe the witnesses in essence. So he's saying that they would, if they said there was this tanai, he would accept what they said, and he wouldn't allow enforcement of the shtar until they went ahead and fulfilled their condition. So basically, he's saying that he's believing the witnesses, which implies that it's not theoretically uprooting the shtar; it's just adding this additional condition. Okay, next, similar related condition. Eid Omar Tanai, Eid Omar Eino Tanai. So you have two witnesses that came. They both certify their signatures on the shtar, but one of the witnesses says yes, but there was a tanai, and the second witness says there was no tanai. So what do you do in that case? Amar Rav Papa says tarvayu b'shitra ma'aya kamisade. Both of them are certifying the shtar that has no tanayim, no conditions with it. So they're both certifying this document as is. V'hai, the kamar tanai, havelei chat. And there's one of them that's coming along and saying, in addition to this shtar that we're both certifying, there's this other element, there's this other condition. V'ein, dvaro shofchad, b'makom shnayim. And the one witness is not significant where there are two witnesses. So basically, you take the fact that you had two witnesses that certified the shtar, and you ignore the fact that there's a one witness that's coming along and adding a tanai. Maskivle Rav Huna bereid Rav Yeshua, but he asks on this, or he asks this, Ihachi, if the case is so that once you have witnesses that signed and that you consider the shtar certified, afilu tarvayu nami, even if both of them then come and say that there was a tanai, they shouldn't be believed, because basically you're doing two separate, you know, you view it as two separate things are happening. Once they say, yes, we signed it and we certifying it, that's action A. And the second thing is like a completely secondary testimony, right? And therefore, it's considered as if they are, like we said earlier, if the witnesses, once they give their first testimony, they can't come along and give a secondary or changed testimony. So as if they testified A, and then they're coming along and they're changing what they said. So therefore, why would Rav Nachman allow this to happen? El Amrinan Hainu Lamikar Tadayu Kasi. We have to say that these witnesses, what they're basically doing is they're coming to undo their earlier certification. So they said A, and they're coming to do something different. They're coming to say, to challenge, they're saying, yes, we certified it is one thing, and then they're challenging what they already said. So the question is that challenge, is it something that's considered valid? Hai nami lamikar sadusa kase. Therefore, it should be similar that if one witness comes along and he says there was a stipulation, there was a tanai, he's basically challenging his own testimony, right? So you have the case of either whether it's two witnesses that come along and they say, yes, it's certified, yes, these are our signatures, and there was a tanai, they're basically, quote unquote, invalidating their certification, or it's one witness coming along invalidating his certification. Behilchasa Kravhuna Bereid Rav Yeshua. And this goes back to the thing we talked about yesterday and the day before and last week about that potentially what we're doing here is we're following Rav Huna, where Rav Huna basically said that the concept is where there's not a need for certification, because his opinion is that when the borrower writes the note himself, there's therefore no need for the certification. So it's as if their testimony is meaningless. Their first testimony is meaningless. So therefore, you only follow their second testimony. That you basically you're accepting the shtar as is. It's not that they're testifying initially, and that's what makes the shtar valid. It's that there's another way that we're validating the shtar by virtue of the fact that the borrower wrote the shtar himself, and therefore you're really only listening to their second testimony. That's why Rav Nachman would believe the two witnesses. Tana Rabbanan, Shnayim Chasumim al Hashtar Umesu. Two witnesses signed the shtar and they died. Uvau Shnayim min Hashuk v'amru. And two people come from the street and they say, Yadanu Shiksav Yadamhu. We know that this is their handwriting. We're certifying their shtar. Aval anusim hayu, but they were forced to sign. Ktanim hayu, they were too young. Psule edus hayu, they were invalid witnesses. Hare elut ne'amanim, they are believed. So the question is, why in this case? Because, you know, this is parallel to the Mishnah where we said that the witnesses themselves say are the ones who are coming in and they're certifying it. The question is, do we believe them if they make the exact same statements? So in the Mishnah, we said because of Pesha Asar, that perhaps that in that case, the witnesses would be believed to also say that these other points, and we went back and forth on it. But here you have completely separate people coming in, and they are effectively the Pesha Asar because they are effectively saying the ones who are certifying the shtar. Are they then allowed to then say, yes, they these are their signatures, but it was an invalid transaction. So we say, they are believed.
Why do they have to be dead? Why are the...
Don't necessarily, not lav dafka, they have to be dead. They're just not here.
Okay.
So So they could be on the other side of the world. So bottom line is two other witnesses. So we said there's three ways of certifying, right? So this is basically saying if you're using one of the other ways, which is other witnesses come along and they certify the signatures and they say, but we happen to know that this also happened. Okay, very good. Okay, good. So it can go either way based on who you say. Good. I'm glad we brought Jonathan here today. Hare Elo Neman, and they're believed. V'im yesh edim sheksav yadam hu. Now, if there are also witnesses that recognize the signature, so again, we said that there's multiple ways of doing it, right? So you have other witnesses. O sheyaksav yadam yotzei makam acher, or there's another way of certifying the signature, as we said. If you had another certified document, mishtar shekara alav arar v'huksav v'vezdin, there's another document that went through the court and was certified that has their quote unquote certified signatures, right? So if you're not dependent upon these other witnesses to certify, ein elu ne'amanim. In that case, you would not believe them. So again, this is basically saying that if you're not dependent upon them, you don't believe this other testimony. If it's not pesha aser, you don't believe them. Umagbian be kishtar ma'alya. So the question is, what do we do now? Do we collect in this case? So here we have a challenge. We had witnesses A that said one thing and witnesses B that said another thing. What do we do now? Vamai tre utre ninhu. So we have two against two, right? We have two witnesses that are saying one thing and two witnesses say another thing, right? Amrav Sheshes zos omeres hakshasa tleles huzamehi. This is why it's good that Harvey's here today. That when you are when you have a contradiction between witnesses, it's basically the beginning of the hazama process. So when you learn about edim zomimim, the way edim zomimim works is edim zomimim is a case where you had witnesses that testified that they saw something happen, and you have another set of witnesses. The other set of witnesses are not disputing what the witnesses are saying, but they're saying it is impossible for those witnesses to have seen this. So they're not saying, until you have witnesses that come along and they say, we saw person A kill person B in front of the bank on Cedar Lane. And the other witnesses say, it's impossible for you to have seen them because at the same time, I saw you in the American Dream Mall. And it's impossible for you to have seen it. And you can't do, when you have the witnesses that come along to make, in the Edim Zomimim process, they have to state this in the presence of the witnesses they're challenging. So the witnesses that are coming along and saying you could not have seen this have to say that in front of those witnesses. Kach ein machshishim the Edim elifneihem. You can contradict witnesses except in front of them. So perhaps what we're saying here is that because they're challenging witnesses that are either dead or not here for whatever reason, maybe it's similar to the process of Edim Zomimim and you wouldn't follow along with that. Amalei Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman argues back. Ilu haya kaman umachshishin lehu. If they were in their presence when they contradicted them, meaning even if the people that signed it and were there and the people were challenging them were there, havei hachasha lo haya mashkichen behu. Would it be considered a valid contradiction? It would be considered a valid contradiction, and we would the havile edus mukshechses. We would say, you know what? It's unclear to us what we're doing here, and therefore they put everything on ice. In other words, they don't allow it to be enforced. So even if they were in front of it and there was a two against two, it would be unclear what they should do with the shtar. So perhaps they wouldn't go forward and enforce the shtar. Hasha delisnu. And now when we have they're not here, the ilu hayla kaman dilma havu moduhu. Maybe if they were in front of us, they would admit what they did. Mehemne. Can we believe what they said? So in other words, we have this. You know, it's unclear what we should do now. Ela Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, Oki Trey Laha De Trey. We take the two witnesses who say that it's invalid. against the two witnesses who signed it. And we leave the money where it belongs. In other words, we leave it where it is. You know, we leave it in whoever's holding it now. Similarly, so there was a story about this guy, Barshtaya. Barshtaya was a person who it was known that he would have some sort of periodic mental issue where he would be considered not in his full capabilities. He sold some property. Asu betray Aravishu Shata Zabin, and two witnesses come later and they said he sold it when he wasn't sane at the time. Vasu betray Amrabishu Chalim Zabim, and two other witnesses come and say, you know what? No, he sold it when he was in his full with his full capabilities. So two say he wasn't an appropriate sale, and two say it was an appropriate sale. Amrav Ashi Oki Trey Lahade Trey, you take two against two. And you leave it with where it is. And we'll conclude with this next piece. We would only do this, we only leave it with Barshatia when we know for sure that this is his property that he inherited from another source, from his father. And if there's not a chazaka that he owned it from outright. We could say that when he bought it, he wasn't in his capabilities. And when he sold it, he wasn't in his capabilities, and we would leave it with whoever he sold it to. So if he owned it from his as an inheritance, we would leave it with Barshatye. But if he didn't, where he bought it at one point and he sold it at another point, and it's unclear to us at what state he was in either case, we would leave it with whoever he sold it to. So with this, we'll pause. We'll pick up Mitzvah Hashem again next week on Tuesday, because Monday is Rosh Chodesh. Everyone should have a wonderful day.